Last presentation for this session, and this time I'd like to invite Tyler Rasik from Texas A&M.
Alrighty, good afternoon. Thank you for sticking around for the final talk of this evening. My name is Tyler Rasik. I'm a fourth-year PhD student in Greg Sword's lab at Texas A&M University. Today I'm going to be talking to you about a component of my dissertation research where we're using population genomics as a tool to improve the area-wide management of the boll weevil, specifically in South Texas and North Mexico. So for those of you who don't know, the boll weevil is Anthonomus grandis, subspecies grandis. It was first reported in Texas in 1892 after it probably naturally migrated across the Rio Grande into Texas, and from there it spread to the rest of the cotton belt. Since its introduction, it's cost the U.S. cotton industry about $13 billion worth of damage, which comes out to about $300 million per year. That's the combined cost of yield loss as well as the cost of controlling the insect. And really, these numbers are not adjusted for inflation, so probably that those are actually an underestimate. Because of the significant economic impact of this pest, this led to the development of the boll weevil eradication program, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. It was a 1978 collaborative effort of the USDA, cotton growers, and academia that was organized to combat Anthonomus grandis grandis. It's historically important because it was one of the first area-wide IPM approaches to be implemented on a large scale, and it was widely considered a huge ecological and agricultural success because it greatly reduced the amount of pesticides that were being sprayed for this insect, and it resulted in the near eradication of this insect from the cotton belt. However, despite the success of this program, the boll weevil does remain a significant concern in South Texas and therefore a threat to the rest of the cotton industry. There's a couple reasons that there's been some roadblocks to eradication in South Texas. The first is that it's simply a favorable habitat for Anthonomus grandis. There is fair weather pretty much year-round for this species, and there are a variety of suitable overwintering host plants that are available to it, whether that's volunteer or wild cotton or a couple other wild host plant species that it can also utilize. There are control discrepancies across the border for a number of reasons. Some of these states are not particularly safe or well-funded, so there might be differences in the way that they're treating for boll weevil in this area on the south side of the border. But ultimately, what all of this results in is insect movement from and into northern Mexico. It does go both ways, because these insects care where the habitat is, not where the borders are, and so they pretty readily move wherever there's habitat. And it's this insect movement that I really want to focus on today. Because insect movement, specifically pest insect movement, can play a really big role in area-wide management. One of the ways in which insect movement can influence management is through insect resistance management. The way populations move and interact can influence the rate of development to transgenics or to pesticides. Thankfully, there's no evidence in boll weevil of any resistance. What's important for the boll weevil is reinfestation of previously managed areas. We want to make sure that when we treat an area, we're not going to get a reinfestation of that area. We want our management to be effective. And so that's kind of why we need to understand where these functionally relevant genetic populations of the boll weevil are. So we don't have something like source sink dynamics being created where you're treating your field or your neighbor's not, and then he's providing a source of migrants back into your field. Alternatively, there could be wild hosts that provide the source. So we really need to understand where these populations are so that we have effective management that sticks. And that's the primary question of my research, is where are the functionally relevant populations of the boll weevil along the U.S.-Mexico border? To do this, we're taking a population genomics approach. We use a sequencing technique called double digest RAD sequencing, and then we'll be analyzing that data generated from that technique using pairwise F-statistics, which measure gene flow, and principal components analysis, which allows us to visualize the population clustering. Specifically, our null hypothesis is that the boll weevil populations in South Texas and northern Mexico are simply a single contiguous metapopulation with high gene flow. This would be indicated by low FST values between pairs of populations and PCA clusters that all overlap. Our first alternative hypothesis is that there are a few distinct populations that share some gene flow. This would be indicated by low to moderate FSTs and some PCA clusters that overlap, but not others. Our second alternative hypothesis is that each geographic region we sampled is a distinct population with very little gene flow between them. This would be indicated by moderate to high FSTs and PCA clusters that do not overlap. So as I mentioned, we're using a population genomics approach to answer this question. Population genomics is simply the use of unbiased molecular markers from across the entire genomes. So it's essentially population genetics on a whole genome scale. And we use that data to genotype the individuals and resolve the population genomic structure. It has a couple advantages over traditional population genetics techniques because it's highly repeatable and accurate. And the real main advantage is that you get many, many more markers. So instead of dozens or hundreds of genetic markers, you're actually looking at thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of markers. So you get much higher resolution. You can actually detect much finer differences between populations that traditional population genetics might not be able to detect. So for the first year of this study, these samples were primarily collected in 2015. They were sent to us by cooperating growers in Mexico and trapped in the lower Rio Grande Valley in Texas. Does this mouse work? Yeah. So we have five individuals that we were able to get good quality DNA from in Sonora, four in Chihuahua, five in Durango, 16 in Tamaulipas, and then 18 in the lower Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. So 48 individuals total. From these individuals, we carried out double-digest RAD sequencing. Double-digest RAD sequencing is just using two restriction enzymes to chop up DNA, and then at those restriction sites, that's where you ligate your sequencing adapters. So it's a really good, repeatable method for obtaining markers that can be used across multiple studies, because as long as you're using the same enzymes, you're always going to recover those same homologous markers across all of your samples. We sequenced those fragments on a single lane of Illumina HiSeq, generating 100 base pair paired-end reads. And then we used the software Stax to identify 6,901 informative loci for our population genetics analyses. We also set our minimum quality score to 32, which is a very high, stringent quality score for next-generation sequencing, for Illumina sequencing. So we're very confident in the sequences that we have for this data set. And then I used GenePop and R to carry out the downstream analyses. So this is the results of our pairwise FST analysis. Again, FST is a measure of gene flow. High FSTs indicate low gene flow, and low FSTs indicate higher gene flow. And generally, anything under 0.05 is considered to be a very low FST. So for the most part here, we have low FSTs. Some of our comparisons with the Sonoran population are a little bit higher, maybe considered moderate. But all of the comparisons are significant except for these two that I've highlighted in purple. So these are both very low FSTs and not significantly different. So what this is indicating is that the Chihuahua and Durango populations have very high gene flow between them. It's probably a single population. And then the Tamaulipas and the lower Rio Grande Valley in Texas, that is a very, very low FST. Non-significant comparison indicates that this is probably a single contiguous population. We can visualize this using a principal components analysis, and that's what you see here. The first two principal components account for about 54% of the observed variation in our data set, and we can see that those two non-significant comparisons are recovered in this analysis as well. So the Tamaulipas and lower Rio Grande Valley population up here, you can see that those cluster right on top of each other. That's a very tight cluster. It's really one population that spans both sides of the border there. And then this is the Chihuahua and Durango comparison that was non-significant. These clusters do not overlap, but these were some of the populations where we had a lower sample size. So it's possible that we just simply have not fully resolved the situation there. But as I'll mention in a moment, we do have more samples coming for those areas. And then pretty clearly we have the Sonoran population down here, which is pretty distinctly different from the other populations. This overlays with the geography really well. We have an eastern, central, and western population cluster. This is what it looks like on our sampling map. So you can see we pretty clearly have this East Coast or Gulf Coast population cluster separated by a mountain range from the kind of desert populations in Chihuahua and Durango, another mountain range, and then the western population cluster over here. And this is roughly consistent with some previous work that's been done on boll weevil, but didn't include the Sonoran populations. So returning to our hypotheses, we've provided support for the first alternative hypothesis that we have a few distinct populations that share some amount of gene flow. Again, we had low to moderate FST values in our pairwise FST analysis, and we had some PCA clusters that overlapped, but not others. So the application of this is to management is really just to help target where our management efforts are and how what areas need to coordinate to have effective management. We've identified these three or four population groups in northern Mexico, three or four because that Chihuahua Durango is still kind of up in the air. But what we need to do is focus us on those regions to have effective management, particularly in areas that span across the border, so the Tamaulipas and the Texas populations. Neither country, neither area there is going to have effective management of the boll weevil unless both areas do. So managers on both sides of the border, they really need to cooperate in order to carry out effective area-wide management. So where we're going with this, we have samples that we've collected in 2016, 2017, and I want to talk about that a little bit. We've submitted 300 more individuals to the sequencing center, so we're greatly expanding our data set. We have additional coverage in all of those areas that we previously sampled in 2015, and we also have samples from Coahuila. And we also had an outbreak of boll weevil, I think in 2015 was the first year, in the Uvalde-Dilley area. This is just north of here, I believe. And this is that same area with the trap. These red pins are traps which we recovered boll weevil from. So we have those individuals as well. And the idea is that we're going to compare the genotypes of these Uvalde weevils to the genotypes we know and see if we can't corroborate with what's currently hypothesized as to where those weevils came from. We've also received extensive sampling from a collaborator in Argentina, so we'll also be documenting the genotypes that are found in Argentina. And we haven't actually submitted the Peruvian samples that we have, but we're hoping to do that in the future as well. Lastly, we're also interested in the subspecies Thurberi, which is a non-pest variant of the boll weevil known as the Thurberia weevil. And there are currently some diagnostic tools which are used to distinguish between these two, which has implications for management, but those tools aren't 100%. So we're currently working to develop some new diagnostic tools from our data set by identifying some loci that are fixed in the Thurberia weevil and in the boll weevil so that we can create a better diagnostic assay to determine those two groups. So we've collected Thurberia weevil from wild cotton in Arizona. There were also some recently trapped in New Mexico. So those are in our 300 that we've submitted recently. And hopefully we'll be able to identify some new diagnostic loci from that data set. Finally, we're also working on genome sequencing for the boll weevil. That's something that's been ongoing for a number of years. We're also looking into RNAi control. A postdoc in Greg's lab, Lauren Rivera-Vega, she has a poster on the RNAi control. It's poster 98 if you're interested in that. And so we're all kind of working together on this boll weevil project. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge my academic advisor, Greg Sword, our USDA collaborators, Charles Sun, Raul Ruiz. Funding for this project came from USDA, FISC Cotton Incorporated, and the Cotton Foundation. Some travel support was provided by International Cotton Advisory Committee. Richard Metz is our contact at the Sequencing Center, so I have to acknowledge him as well for all of his support. Michael Dickens and Jason Wolf are two people that have been helping me with the bioinformatics for the analyses. Juan Landovar and Ted Borotinsky have helped us extensively with sample acquisition, and Zoe Kramer, an undergraduate in the lab, helped me with all of the DNA extractions. So thank you to those people. Thank you all for listening. And with that, I'll happily take any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for the speaker?
Yeah, so the question is, what are the management possibilities with this information? So my main idea for that is to, you know, help foster that international collaboration. So that the management itself, the way we manage the boll weevil is, it's very effective. We eradicated them. So it's more just to help make sure that the management stays effective and that people aren't wasting their time or their money treating an area that's going to become reinfested. It's mainly to prevent reinfestation is the main application. Yeah, the question is regarding the Uvalde weevils and where they came from. That is the working hypothesis. I don't want to say anything to that. That's kind of our hypothesis, but we don't know for sure. Once we get our data back from the sequencing center, we'll be able to answer that more firmly. Yeah.
Any other question for the speaker? Well, thank you, Dave.
Thank you.